You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and J-Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
So, again, we talked to Matt Nagy for quite a while. Really enjoyed that. I think he had a good time. You could tell he was relaxed. He was a little Waffle House action.
He was into the Waffle House.
He was.
And so is Daz Newsom. He is the new Tim Anderson.
Right.
Because Tim, when he first got here, is like, where's y'all Waffle House? Like, Tim, there's no Waffle House.
Don't have those here.
It's like, why don't you have one on 35th?
Right.
You and Kenny Williams, I told him my first interview with them, you and Kenny Williams, you build yourself a Waffle House on 35th and Vec.
Yeah, right there.
Just do it in that area. It's
sensation.
Oh, man, it'd be a million dollar operation, 24 hours a day. But that's what Daz Newsom wants. That's what Matt Nagy wants. He likes to take that drive if he could.
He does. So Jeff Dickerson joins us now. He is our Bears insider. JD, good morning. So you heard what Matt had to say. Do you believe it that he will truly know when Justin Fields is ready and give him the chance in camp?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone is going to know. And that's the thing about the NFL. Players know when other players can play. I mean, it's very simple. Now, I'll go back to 2017, not to beat up Mitch or anything, but the reality is they knew that Trubisky, as limited as he was going to be, was going to give them a better chance to win and was a better player than Mike Glennon after 4 weeks of the regular season, and they had to make the move. I'm not saying let's throw anyone a parade for that or anything, but I mean, that's just how it goes. If a guy is that much better, it's the NFL. He has to play. Now, the situation here, though, is much different because they do believe that Andy Dalton can, or they hope, can sort of hold down the fort for a little while until Justin Fields is truly ready. But, guys, if we get this the summer, and again, this offseason program is kind of goofy because you saw they kind of trimmed down some OTAs and, you know, what work that Justin Fields will get between now and the veteran mandatory minicamp remains to be seen. But let's say we get to training camp, and for 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, Justin Fields is just light years ahead of the other two quarterbacks. Everyone's going to see that. Everyone's going to know that. If he's ready, he's ready. He plays. I don't believe they think that is going to be how it unfolds, though. I think they feel like it will take him a little bit, and that's why they are committed to Dalton for the time being. But when Fields is ready, guys, he's going to be the quarterback.
So let's talk a little about the running game, too, with Tariq Cohen returning. Every time we saw Cordell Patterson, JD, it was kind of like, okay, those are supposed to be Tariq Cohen plays. So Cohen's there, Montgomery's there. You heard Nagy talking about the emphasis of running the football. So how do you look at the offense? Do you believe that Nagy will, based on what we saw at the end of the season, acquiesce to the running game some?
Well, I never really know about the running game sometimes because every time you think that this is the perfect week to buy into the running game, it doesn't happen. I do think that David Montgomery, though, is going to enter a very important year in his career. You know, he's going to want to get paid here. He had a very good season last year. I think the Bears believe he can be even better, and he has motivation, obviously, you know, going into the season he's going into. So, I mean, I think on paper – they have every motivation, Jonathan, wouldn't you say, to mix in the run quite efficiently and run the football? Mm-hmm. It just hasn't materialized sometimes in games. So I want to believe that that's going to be the case, but we're going to have to really kind of see it in order to believe it. But when I look at the offense, and you would ask me, you know, what are the strengths of this offense? Jonathan, the first position group that comes to my mind would be running back, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You got three guys.
You got three guys. Mm-hmm. You got question marks at wide receiver.
Right.
At tight end. I mean, you think Cole Kmet in year two will make some improvements. You know, Jimmy Graham had an okay year last year, caught a lot of touchdowns, but I think we all know that he is obviously in the twilight of his career. On the offensive line, you've got two new starting, possibly offensive tackles. One of them will be Tevin Jenkins, likely on the left side. That's where he was working this weekend at rookie minicamp. So, I mean, there are question marks all over the place. At quarterback, you've got Dalton. Will it be Fields? But at running back, you have got some quality guys. You made some good signing in the offseason. And I would say, again, that's one of your stronger points of your offense.
Jimmy Graham's going to make the football team, right?
Oh, yeah, he's going to make the football team.
Yeah, he'd be gone already.
Yeah, he already would have been let go.
No doubt.
I'm just concerned about the salary cap. I just want to see how much more you can
They were,
off.
Too. That's why Leno's gone. I mean, they were up against it, and that opened up a little bit of money. But in terms of, you look around the NFL, the Bears are pretty tight against the cap right now.
So what's the next move that they could make? It's not going to be, as Hoodie just asked, about Jimmy Graham. They've already moved on Bobby Massey and Charles Leno. Is there another veteran that they could move on that wouldn't shock you, that would give you more space?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can't get rid of Robert Quinn. That money is just on the books. That's guaranteed. I know there was some speculation about Akeem Hicks, certainly, because that's a big number. But, guys, how can you make any argument whatsoever that you're going to be better on defense without Akeem Hicks? Are you serious? Like, there's no way. So, I mean, I get it. Like, there were some tough decisions that had to be made. But right now, since they're kind of through that, I would say there's no way. He's got to be on the team because they want to win. Now, is there this, you know, incredible urgency that if they don't win 11 games or 12 games, everyone's fired? I don't feel that way. And I've told you guys this. I look at this as a two-year window. Okay, they've got 2 years to get Justin Fields ready to go, have him playing at a very, you know, high level. If they do that, I think everything else takes care of itself. If we get to year two, guys, if we get to 2022 and Fields, he'll be playing, but if he's not playing well and they're struggling, then I think everyone's jobs are going to be in jeopardy. But I don't sense that immediately. I think that is another reflection as to why they feel like they can take this sort of wait-and-see cautious approach to make sure they don't put Fields out there before he's ready.
At training camp, is this a battle between Nichols and Goldman at the nose, or is this Goldman's job now that he returns?
Well, I'd like to see, I mean, we got to see Goldman coming back from missing the year, and you understand why he did, because of COVID-19-related concerns. Mm-hmm. I think both guys will just play. I mean, I think Eddie Goldman, you know, that they missed him last year, no doubt. I think Bilal Nichols is a terrific player, and I think he's done a really good job. So I think, you know, it's a luxury. I think you got both those guys. I think both guys play a ton in their rotation. But I think getting Eddie Goldman back and, you know, making sure that he's in good shape and the year off didn't do, you know, any sort of, you know, conditioning damage long term or anything, I think is very important. But I think that's a nice two interior to have there on your defensive line.
I just don't like the salary cap situation, Cap.
No, I get it.
I'm looking at this depth chart just kind of like, well, you know, Jeff, we just thought Eway Booneyway was just, you know, you're taking off a quarter or a dime off your salary cap. It's not good, man.
Well, I mean, they paid a lot of guys on defense, right?
Yeah.
Because the window, they thought the window was open to win. So you have a monster deal like Khalil Mack is on the books. You paid Eddie Jackson. You had to get rid of Kyle Fuller because that was one deal you couldn't handle. But, I mean, a lot of guys have been paid. Akeem Hicks got paid. Trevathan comes back. He gets paid. They're going to have to pay Roquan Smith eventually. You know, Allen Robinson's taken up a big chunk for the franchise tag on offense. Look, they have handed out money. Now it's time to win championships. They're not there yet. Now the hope is that they finally got the most important position right, where in a short period of time, they're going to really be in a position where they can compete and can be a legit contender for a championship. But right now, there's just a lot of money on the books and no titles to show for it, my friends.
Tevin Jenkins has been basically given the left tackle spot, even though he wasn't a full-time left tackle in college. He had played some games there. Is there a swing guy out there that they can get cheaply that they're bringing in going, just in case we can play that guy there? Because I don't know who else on the roster you're playing at left tackle then. Who is it?
I don't think so. So I don't believe that they would have wasted time putting him on the left side over the weekend if that wasn't the plan. I'm not trying to, like, give up the family secrets here or anything, but, I mean, obviously, when you release your starting left tackle and you move up to get this guy in the second round and you say that he can play either right or left, odds are he's going to be your left. They'll have a Fetty. They'll have Larry Borum. They'll have some other guys competing for the right side. No, Cap, I don't think that I think the plan is that he is going to play from day one. Again, like, second-round picks traditionally play right away. I mean, even on the Bears, I know the draft record has been a bit spotty, if you want to say, in the first round. But as far as second-round picks, I mean, former second-round picks, I mean, James Daniels played pretty much right away. They tried to get Shaheen on the field, but that didn't work out so well. Cody Whitehair, you know, he played right away. Goldman played right away. You have to go back to an Eagle Ferguson, guys, to find out second-round pick that didn't really get on the field immediately.
Yuck.
And maybe John Bostic played right away. Wow. Alshon Jeffrey played right away.
What about a Dan Bezine?
Dan Bezine, who the story goes there that he was they had to work on him for like 2 hours just to get him on the practice field at college. He was so banged up. But, hey, you know what? He was a second-round pick. Steven Paya. Who had the great bench press at the combine was the second-round pick.
Who was the guy jumped out of the pool? Jerron Gilbert?
Jerron Gilbert jumped out of that pool, man, and that was about it. That's about all. Tillman was a great second-round pick. Tank Johnson. Mark Bradley, not so good. Daniel Manning, Devin Hester. How about those two second-round picks
back
in 2006?
I like that. So I think your swing guys, Cap, would probably be, at this point, Mustafa and Bars. They're going to have to be versatile enough.
I think Mustafa starts at center.
Yeah, I think he starts at center.
And Whitehair goes what? Guard?
Guard, yeah. Yeah.
Daniels and Whitehair at your guards. Effetti at right tackle unless Larry Borum beats him out. Tevin Jenkins at left. Lakavius Simmons will be the backup. And then you have Alex Bars as a swing guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. At some point, you might have to get someone else. The reason why we're in the weeds on the offensive line is because it's one of the things Nagy talked about, Jeff. Like, if you're going to run the football at all, if you're going to have play action, your offensive line has to work in concert. That's got to get right. Yeah. It's got to stay healthy as much as possible.
Again, and we talked about this last week, they do like the interior. I mean, I think that the moves this offseason kind of reflected that. The problem areas that they saw, they took the big circle and circled right tackle. Left tackle, and now pretty much both those guys are gone. Also, I believe a John Roper, also a former second-round pick
John
for the Bears.
John Roper!
Wow.
Chicago! John Roper. That's good stuff there. Well, I can't help you, Cap, on the salary cap thing. I'm looking. I'm looking for cuts.
There's not a lot of flexibility there.
Your guy Pacer just handing out contracts like government cheese. It was amazing. I mean, just big-time deals. That hamstrung.
Especially on defense.
Yeah. I mean, in an offensive league.
Right. They thought, because that goes back to, they thought maybe we can win while Mitch is on his rookie deal. And they didn't.
And they did not. And that's why they made the move for Khalil Mack. Unfortunately, it did not happen. But they do have a second chance here, guys, to get it right with Justin Fields. And, oh, by the way, I know you talked to Nagy and everything, and he gave you the lowdown. Fields is the guy, Jonathan Capp, that we watched on Saturday at Ohio State the last 2 years. That was my impression from the weekend. He is
awfully good.
Well, everything is there. Now, can they take that? Can they harness that? And can they make him into a franchise quarterback in the NFL? Hey, they have to prove to everyone that can happen. But as far as like, so Dow Loggins used to use this analogy with Mitch, and it was so ridiculous, right? He'd be like, Mitch has got every club in the bag, right, for golf. Now, that was not true.
Yes.
This guy really does have everything you need. Now, can he become a great professional quarterback? That's up to the Bears to turn him into that. But as far as, like, size, as far as, like, arm strength, you know what I mean, mobility, I mean, it's all there. I mean, there's no denying it. And I didn't go there expecting to see anything different because you watched him in college for 2 years at Ohio State, one of the best programs in the country. That's why you take guys from these programs that have played in these big games against the best competition and done well. That usually translates to the NFL.
JD, thanks, man. Have a great day, okay?
All right, guys. Take care.
You're the man. There he is, Jeff Dickerson. All right, an all-time moment in the history of catfishing. All time. I mean awful. You're not going to believe it. Next.
Cap. J-Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
So, after the draft ends, the third day, GMs will tell you it's way, way more intense at the end of the draft than it is like throughout days two and three. Day one's really intense. But they have their list, they have their board, they usually stay loyal to their board. And then it's get on the phones and start calling guys and trying to sign them as undrafted free agents. And occasionally you're going to find a pretty solid football player out there. I mean, Tony Romo was an undrafted guy.
That's right.
You never know who you're going to find. And so these guys are all waiting for their phone to ring, whether it's their agent, hey, you got offers from six different teams, or a coach reach out to a kid who doesn't even have an agent. Jonathan, this is Coach Nagy. I've watched you play. Would you like to sign an undrafted tender with us
and
come to camp?
Me?
Correct. There's a young man. His name is Wontarius Bryant. He played at Austin Peay State University. He's a defensive back. So he gets a text from an Atlanta area code. It says this is defense coordinator Dean Pease of the Atlanta Falcons.
This is not a Simpsons bit. His actual name is Dean Pease.
Correct.
Yep.
P-E-E-S. Dean Pease. Hey, Wontarius, we would like to have you come in as an undrafted free agent for a tryout.
Sure.
He was so fired up. This is my dream. I've been training for this. I didn't get drafted, but I think I can make this football team.
Mm-hmm.
They tell him when camp is, when to be there.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up. Hi, I'm Wontarius Bryant. Yeah, who are you? You guys texted me. Coach Pease offered me a contract. I'm here for my tryout. Excuse me? We don't know who you are. Coach Pease never texted you.
What? Oh, God.
And they turn him away.
Now, that's funny on one end, but on the other end, that's really bad.
Horrible.
I don't know where Bryant. Here's the question I don't know. The answer is, where is Bryant from? Did he have to travel, fly in? Because if he's not in the Atlanta area and he's got to, like, train in or fly in, that's even tougher, right?
Right.
Because now you're spending your own money to be part of Dean Pease and the Atlanta Falcons, and it's just a catfishing story. It's just a rib on him. And the other question on top of that is, who's mean enough to do that to Wontarius Bryant?
Right. Like, is he like a jerky kid that someone goes, I'm going to get him back? Or is it, he's a great kid, and he just got catfished by the biggest ass in the history of the world.
And Danny, that is under the heading of catfishing, correct? That's, we could say that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You're chasing your tail there.
The MTV should be all over this one. They should be contacting all the parties involved and see. This would be the most epic one-hour catfish special of all time.
Wontarius Bryant is originally from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, he graduated in May of 2019.
He flew in.
He stayed to play an extra year, graduated May 2019 with a degree in business management, pursuing second degree in health and human performance. So here's a kid, athletic director's honor roll, multiple semesters.
So here's what you're doing. So Danny, and Jeff, you're getting a burner phone, right? With the 404 area code, because that's Georgia, right?
Yep.
And you're playing a rib on this guy. And I'd love to know the backstory of why. Is Bryant a bad guy? Or is the person that put the rib on him, is he a bad guy?
Right.
Because otherwise, why would you make him fly in? And it's just like, nah, it's not real. That's really intricate.
The whole catfishing incident is clearly, the people on the other end, they're bad people. However, Hoodie, I'm with you. Like, my initial thought was, boy, that's a lot of effort to go through to try and pull up, you know, if you want to be nice and classify it as pull a prank on somebody, if, you know, because clearly they know him in some way. But you wonder, too, has he rubbed somebody the wrong way? Has he been a bad person in his day-to-day life to put this in the lexicon where they're like, you know what, I need to get this dude back because he's a jerk. We don't know. It's complete speculation by my part. Might be the greatest person, human being on the earth. But it is very elaborate to go through for somebody who you know who you just know in passing. It's a jerky thing to do if you don't. If you're not,
it's
holding
a horrible
a grudge.
Thing to do.
I asked you guys this in the IDOT bullpen. What do you think is worse? Would you rather be Manti Te'o, who was catfished, you know, quote unquote, with a girlfriend, and that played out on the public stage, or would you rather be catfished like this?
Probably Manti Te'o, because I'm not losing any money out of the situation. I'm pretty sure that he flew in from Nashville to Atlanta. I don't know if that's a direct flight, right? But just the point is that you're coming out of money for this prank. That's bad. Now, but the question is the guy who pulled this jerky or funny? Some would find this to be pretty hilarious.
I think the guy's complete ass. The guy who pranked him.
Yeah.
Complete ass.
Now, by the way, IDOT, driving, biking, or walking responsibly really is a matter of life or death. Learn more. Or through social media at lifeordeathillinois.com. Did you didn't read his statement, right? Did you, Ontarius Bryant?
I did read, and he wants to move on from it. He's declining all interview requests. But
did you see what he posted on his Instagram? Like,
Yes, I did.
You want to read it, or I have it up?
If you have it, go ahead.
Because this, I think, makes you lean towards the people who did this are real jerks. So Ontarius Bryant on his Instagram posted, "I want to say thank you to everyone who has been in my corner while I have been pursuing my lifelong dream of playing in the NFL. Apparently, the opportunity of attending rookie minicamp with the Atlanta Falcons was not a legit opportunity. Someone contacted me from the 404 area code number pretending to be Dean Pease. I did not realize it was not a legit opportunity until I traveled to the facility for rookie minicamp check on Wednesday, May 12th. It's most definitely one of the most embarrassing things that has ever happened to me and a very humbling experience. Just want to apologize to everyone in the Atlanta Falcons organization for the mix-up. I honestly thought it was a legit opportunity on my end. I do not know or understand why this happened, but I do know that everything happens for a reason. Yes, this was heartbreaking for me, but just another stepping stone that I'm not afraid to admit or overcome. At the end of the day, this will not make or break me. I will still continue to fight for my dream because I know it's what I really want. I'm still striving."
Okay. Well, then, you know what? If I'm a coach and I think he's good enough, I bring him into camp based on this story.
I would, too.
As long as he's healthy.
I said to you guys when we were talking in the IDOT bullpen that I really, like, if I'm the Atlanta Falcons, and it may never have gotten to the coaches or the personnel department. It may have just been, you know, some entry-level person checking everyone and going, "Sorry, dude, you're not on the list. You got to go." Boom. But, like, if you were the GM of the team, when you go, "You know what, that's an awful story. Come in here.
Yes.
Sign this tender. You're going to go to camp with us.
Make sure you're healthy.
Mini camp.
And let's just see what you could do."
Correct. And at the end, if he's no good, move on. But we're going to give you a chance.
He's pounding on the door, can't get in because they don't know who he is. That's brutal. I would agree with that. So we should put that on the poll, though, shouldn't we, Danny? Put that on the poll.
Would you rather be catfished by a girl or a football team? Or a guy pretending to be a football team?
They're both emotional, but I would say I'd rather be Te'o than be this kid in this spot.
Well, I think this catfishing is far worse, right? How many women are there in the world, or how many, you know, whatever you're interested in, you can find another to date. There's only 32 NFL teams. You only have 32 shots to make your dream come true, right?
Yeah.
This is a lot crueler of a catfish than, you know, pretending to be in love with some girl that you never met. Part of me feels like when people fall in love with girls over the internet or guys over the internet that they never met, it's kind of shame on them anyways, right? Like, at some point, you need to meet this person, Manti Te'o. You can't date someone for a year that you've never seen.
Now, do we throw any shade at Bryant for not crossing T's and dotting I's and following up, realizing that you're probably not going to get just a text from a defensive coordinator inviting you?
The kid believes in that type of technology. I believe in over-the-phone conversation or email, if nothing else.
I wonder
official.
If he has an agent, though. Like, isn't there somebody here that helps him with this process?
Well, if he's not being invited to mini camps, he probably doesn't have an agent. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So, sidebar, may I approach, Your Honor?
You may.
So, I know that Joe Girardi, you and I have the same agent.
Mm-hmm.
Your guy, Joe, have you sent a text? Have you reached out to the Philadelphia Phillies manager?
I let that go after I saw him and Gene Segura had a little issue in the dugout.
So, Cap, this is not the 1970s. I don't care how fired you up you are as a manager. You can't argue openly and fight with players. Wasn't this an issue with the Marlins, too, with Joe? I think it was.
I don't think it was. He got into it with the owner.
Well, openly, right?
The owner was yelling at the umpire. Yeah. And Joe said, stop! I'll handle talking to the umpires, not you.
Openly. I think that's enough.
That owner was nuts, though.
I understand.
And he's out.
Yes. And so is the general manager, David Sampson.
Yes.
Also.
Correct.
A crazy person, right?
Crazy.
But I think you maybe a conversation with Joe, maybe a little
check
conversation.
In. We'll check in.
If you're fighting with your team again, like, I don't know how many jobs Joe will get. I mean, you got to get this thing in Philadelphia right. But arguing and having a conversation with Gene Segura, that didn't help.
Yeah, but maybe Segura was wrong. I mean, Joe Girardi could have been at the wrong place in the wrong time. Segura had multiple errors in that game. Who knows what Girardi said to him? Maybe just Girardi went up to him and said, like, hey, man, you got to do better, or we need more out of you. And Segura went 0-60.
Yeah, I don't know any of the details.
We don't know what the conversation was before Segura went 0-60 and had to be held back by a coach. Maybe Joe Girardi was just like, come on, man, get your head in the game, or, you know, standard coaching.
No question. Very, very possible. I know Joe. You know Joe. He's a great, great dude.
But he
also holds his team to a very high standard. I can tell you, he loves managing Bryce Harper. He said, Bryce Harper, phenomenal to manage.
That's just not how it works in 2021, though. I agree with what you're saying, Danny, but just when you're open like that and people can see it, you know the Fanatic and IP up there are just having a ball with that. Like, Girardi goes off. Flies off the handle, he can't handle it, the pressure's too much, all this stuff. Just part of it.
Yeah, but he's, like, the thing I love about Joe Girardi is I'm glad that the Cubs got Joe Maddon instead of him, but I wouldn't have complained if they got Joe Girardi because he's a real manager, he's a coach. He's out there for the betterment of the team, and whatever he said to Segura was probably not personal. It was, he had enough of the errors, and it's like, dude, we need you to do your job here.
But before Maddon, you wanted Girardi, did you not?
No, I didn't know Maddon was possible. So, yeah, I wanted Girardi. But then when they said Maddon, I was doing backflips.
And you wanted Girardi.
I did.
He's a friend.
Well, because I think he's a great manager.
Cap would have a World Series ring if Girardi was there, for sure.
That's for sure.
For sure.
So.
And speaking of that, let's talk about the plan. Yes, the plan. There's an extra little something in the plan written by David Kaplan.
Right, in the soft cover edition, the paperback that just was released.
Yes.
That's the hardcover. There's now a new edition. What went wrong?
Yes. There'll be more coming up, though, after this whole thing collapses.
He became a Sox fan so he could write the Southside version of the Sox plan.
That's not happening.
100%.
That is not
happening. He's embedded with Rick Hahn. He's embedded with Scott Reifert. Right now, it's in the works. And the second the White Sox win the World Series, the plan, the Southside edition by David
Kaplan. Not happening. I'm done writing.
Available on Amazon and other
long time.
And bookstores, right?
Correct.
The little extra.
6,000 words on what went wrong. Oh, well. 312-332-3776. Sidebar, may I approach?
Yes.
I always like to get Vicky McHenry, who's a great follower of ours and listener.
Yes.
Danny's the one that turned. I just want to make it clear. She thanked me for recommending the 21 seasoning salute from Trader Joe's. Actually, Danny bought me the first bottle of that. Stuff's the greatest, Danny. And she cooked with it over the weekend. So we always try to bring other things to our listeners.
Yes.
Phenomenal stuff. I went to Mimas Taste of Cuba Saturday night with my family and friends. Dude, sandwich on a plantain, the Cuban Jibarito. Oh, my God. The greatest. 2900 block of Irving Park. Just go there and eat. Don't worry about the calories. And trust me, it's insane. It's the best.
Tell you, the Cap sent you.
We're going to go. You and I.
Oh, I'd love that.
Before we go see a ball game at Wrigley together.
Yep, that won't happen.
312-332-3776. Shot or no shot? Next.
Take that.
This is Cap and J Hood. Enjoy the show each morning in your Instagrammies. At Cap J Hood on Instagram.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000. That's why I see him in the shot. No shot. With Cap and J Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I see
him in the shot. Shot or no shot brought to you by PointsBet Sportsbook at Hawthorne Racecourse. PointsBet Sportsbook is now open. Download the PointsBet app right now. Stop by Hawthorne Racecourse. You'll take 2 minutes and register your account. Danny Zetterman.
Gentlemen.
Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Cap. Gentlemen.
Morning, Danny.
Hey, Hoodrow. How you doing, handsome?
I'm doing great. Great weekend. Spent time of it. Do a little White Sox pre-post on Saturday. Relaxed on Sunday. So, you know, a pretty good weekend. Pretty good.
You seem well-rested. I like it.
Oh, absolutely.
Looking sharp. Gentlemen, the Chicago Cubs are hosting John Lester this evening. I want to ask you guys, shot or no shot, Cub fans should be rooting for John Lester over their Cubbies tonight.
No shot. No shot. I love John, and I'm thrilled for what he did for the Cubs. But tonight, I hope they beat the living daylights out of the Nationals. Sorry.
The indication will, if you see red-faced John Lester, that means the Cubs are getting to him.
Yes.
If the face turns beet red, he's pissed. That's the John Lester I remember. I remember also when Frank Thomas was an A, and he came to Guaranteed Rate Field, and I was there at the ballpark, and he hit a home run against us, and I said, oh, that's great. Then he hit a second one, and then I booed him out of the ballpark.
You're like, enough.
So in that spot, I would say no shot. You go Cubs all the way.
Here's why I say shot. The Cubs aren't winning the World Series this year. We'll be lucky if the Cubs make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine John Lester tonight taking the mound and having one of those games where he goes complete game, throws 10 strikeouts, is just dominant? I mean, that would feel good for him and Cub fans. I mean, he did, you know, really help us win that World Series in 2016. Without him, we wouldn't have won it.
Agreed.
So I'm kind of rooting for him to have an awesome game. Don't really care that much if the Cubs win or lose this one.
And John Lester has thrown a no-hitter.
How great would that be?
Against his former,
around like little kids on
against
the field.
His old team, John Lester. How about that, Ron Coomer?
That would be former mates.
I saw every inning except one when I was in the restroom.
Oh!
Wow.
Gentlemen, the Bulls season is thankfully over. However, Zach LaVine took his game to a whole nother level. He set career highs in points, rebounds, assists, field goal percentage, and three-point percentage. He finished seventh in the league in scoring. He's probably going to make one of the all-NBA teams. Zach LaVine is also entering the final season of his contract. So I ask you guys, shot or no shot, Zach LaVine gets paid by the Bulls this offseason.
That's a no shot, according to my partner, David Kaplan.
Yeah, I believe that's a no shot as well. Because I think he's going to bet on himself that he'll have a bigger year next year, and he'll be the pandemic should be by us. He probably won't have to deal with that, and he can get paid more next summer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's going to wait to get paid on the bird rights.
Yeah, I would say no shot to that. And Danny, if there's time, I'd love to unpack the Bulls. There's a lot to talk about here because you see how the NBA is opening doors for less than stellar teams, you know, the play-in game, all that, Cap. So hopefully the Bulls can be able to get into the playoffs next season. Because I didn't expect, I told you from the beginning, zero expectations.
Same here.
Evaluation year. Year two, let's see if you can get better.
Yep, take a step. Danny.
Gentlemen, Lakers-Warriors, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Central Time in play-in tournament. Gentlemen, shot or no shot, Lakers-Warriors will be the most exciting game of the entire NBA playoffs.
That's a no shot. You know, it'll be interesting to see the Warriors and Lakers because of what's on the line. But we got to see what the matchups look like before I declare that. On the surface, I would say yes. Who wouldn't want to see Steph against LeBron, right?
Agreed. I just don't think two teams that don't have enough firepower, in my opinion, to win the title. The Lakers, if they're healthy, obviously are better than Golden State. I just don't think either of those teams are winning the title. I don't. So, yeah, it'll be a cool moment to watch those two teams, but no, it will not be the most exciting.
But, Cap, what do I do with this $150 bet to Lakers to repeat that I could not cash out?
I would say that's probably not going to end well for you.
It wouldn't let me cash out of that. When I start seeing those injuries with AD and LeBron, cash out. Give me a cash out.
Nothing.
No shot.
Take like, that.
Oh, God, I'm locked in here.
You're locked in.
So it's like, yeah. Yeah, just, I think it's going to be a fun matchup, though. Just the way the Lakers have been hanging on there. And then, of course, what's going on with Golden State with Steph Curry. Steph Curry, man, he still keeps it interesting. Scoring title, guy's the best shooter I've ever seen.
He's a beast.
9 o'clock Central, huh?
Yep.
9 o'clock.
And I love watching any kind of playoff in any sport. I watched hockey last night. It was insane. Florida and Tampa. I'll be watching hockey and basketball all week long for the next, what, 8 weeks?
So Wednesday in bed at 10?
I'll be watching in bed if I'm in bed. I'm going to watch that game unless it gets to be a blowout. Then I'll turn it off.
Whole game. So we can break it down together.
Sure.
So when it ends at a quarter to 11. Quarter to 12, rather.
Whatever you want.
Okay. I'll be asking you about certain passes in the third quarter. Just be ready.
Bring it on.
Okay.
You got it.
Yes, because that's that.
Again, if it's a blowout, I'm out.
I got it.
More than 20, I'm gone.
Okay. So 20 is the threshold.
20 is the threshold.
All right. You heard that, Danny.
I got it written down.
We're going to talk about intricate things in that. And he's going to say, wow. Well,
I'll ask Buddy, you. I was fastest. Danny.
Gentlemen, Tom Brenneman's favorite player, Nick Castellanos, had a great game on Saturday. He went 3-for-5. He had his 10th home run of the season in a Reds
victory. There's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos. It will be a home run.
After hitting the home run, Castellanos walked over to the stands and he fist bumped a fan in the front row in Denver. After the game, he let that fan give the interview with the Cincinnati broadcast. What I'm going to play for you here is the play-by-play of the home run and then the fan being interviewed in Cincinnati. Take a listen.
Oh, look at this. The power of the fist bump. He's a man of the people.
Yeah. All right, be careful. You're on live TV here now. What led up to the fist bump? So, I told Nick when he got up there that he should imagine that Rob Manfred's face was on the baseball. And the next pitch, he lit it up over the fence, baby.
So, guys, that was the fan telling Castellanos to imagine that the commissioner's face was the baseball. I ask you guys this. Shot or no shot? Although Castellanos said nothing, Major League Baseball will issue some sort of punishment to him.
No shot. No shot whatsoever.
It's not the NFL.
Yeah. There's zero chance he's getting any punishment. Rob Manfred's making whatever he's making, $30 million a year. What does Goodell make, 44?
40. Goodell made 40.
40. Huh. Manfred's somewhere in that $20 to $30 million range. He's got bigger fish to fry.
Now, this is the Red Zoom postgame, correct?
So that, no, that was actually, you know, when after, like, when the White Sox have a win, they'll go to, like, the star of the game, Jason and Steve Stone.
Yeah.
So that was on the field. On the field where the fan was still there. So Nick Castellanos has the headsets, and instead of answering the question, just hands the headsets to the fan who he gave the fist bump to.
The Reds will be reprimanded, not Castellanos.
Nobody will be.
No, that does not work. They won't like that. Especially going after Manfred, the fan. I don't think they'll like that. Mm-mm. They're not fun. Baseball's not fun that way.
There is, okay, we'll see. There is, in my opinion, zero chance there's any fine or anything. Zero.
I know there'll be a letter, if nothing else. No more fans in the post game. It'll be something like that.
That's my thinking is they'll find a backdoor fine. What they'll do is they'll say, you have an obligation to Major League Baseball and the fans to do this interview. By pawning it off to the fan, you let down your end of the agreement, and here's a small fine or whatever. But in reality, the fine is because he let the fan trash the commissioner.
Here's what you do. If you're the Reds' social media director, you craft an apology letter apologizing to Major League Baseball for an incident by the fan. They were unaware that he was going to obviously denigrate Rob Manfred in any way. And it is on behalf of the Cincinnati Reds organization.
As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run.
And then you put that in the middle of it and you make it its own thing.
Was the guy interviewing the fan there Tom Brenneman's replacement?
No, I just think he's a sideline guy.
I think he was like the Cole Wright.
Yeah, he's the studio
the
host.
Chuck Garfine.
He's the cap of Cincinnati.
Gotcha.
Holding down the pre and post. Well, the old cap. The old cap ways.
That's so
funny. They haven't had a pre and post game show since you left.
I don't think I'll ever wear this headset again. I'm a man of faith. Cappy.
Basketball Hall of Fame festivities were this weekend.
Get the phone.
That's next.
Oh, God. Len, get the phone.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
Our new morning show.
This is Cap and Jay Hood
on ESPN 1000
and the ESPN Chicago app.
Don't forget Carmen Yurk in for crosstalk in 5 or 6 minutes. Then Greeny at 12, Waddle and Sylvie at 2, Bleck and Abdallah are usually weeknights if we don't have baseball. But tonight, it's the Twins and the White Sox. Coverage starts at 6.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to that series. And also, the question I was wondering before the Basketball Hall of Fame cap was, who's the next Bull to go in? And by God, we got a Bull. Congratulations, Ben Wallace. You'll be in the,
about that.
In the Hall of Fame.
Tony
Kukoc.
The gourmet waiter.
What took so long, Cap?
I don't know, because when you go back through, because this is the Basketball Hall of Fame, It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. When you go back through and you look at Tony's numbers in Europe, when he played for Benetton Treviso, and when he was starring in Split in Croatia, I mean, his worldwide numbers are crazy good. Crazy good.
Go back to the Last Dance documentary, and you could see exactly what Tony had to go through, how they just kind of pushed Tony to the side, like there's no way he could be part of our team. This is someone that Kraus scouted and thought that he could really fit the team, and they were like, no, we're going to shut you down the Olympics. Now you're part of our team. So he was able to really mesh and have a lot of great moments with the Bulls.
How about this 1996-97 Bulls roster? 5 guys are now in the Hall of Fame. Plus 2 Hall of Fame coaches, Phil Jackson and the late Tex Winter. And the late Jerry Krause is in as GM. 8. Crazy. Eight into the Basketball Hall of Fame is pretty special.
Now, he's in there because of the championships, right? Kukoc.
Yes.
Is it for the production too with the Bulls, or you think it leans more international or the Bulls?
I think just the whole body of work, the whole body of work.
See, the Basketball Hall of Fame is funny, as you could tell, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting because, you know, like Ben Wallace being in, you're like the ultimate rebounder, strong defender. Is he in the Hall? Yes, he is. And it's kind of like, really? Because you're looking at numbers, you're looking at points per game, you're looking at championships. Ultimately, in this generation of sports talk, how many rings have you won? That's the first thing, right? How many rings did you win? Okay, now look at your body of work. Now, how many playoffs were you in? How many times were you an all-star? Ben Wallace is in there, though. And then people are wondering about Chris Webber, too. Like, did anyone watch Webber with the Bullets? He was a tremendous player.
Tremendous force.
Yeah, you know, he was a very solid player, so that doesn't surprise me. But if I just tell you Tony Kukoc's career numbers in the NBA are similar to Zach Randolph, what would you say?
That would shock me.
And Donyale Marshall, Jermaine O'Neal, Nene, Corey Maggette, Danny Manning, Mickey Johnson, former Bull Mickey Johnson, right?
Where did he go to college?
Kansas?
Aurora University.
Oh, was it Aurora University? Really?
Right,
Danny
out here.
Manning went to Kansas. You get that one.
Tayshaun Prince, Derek Coleman, and Nick Anderson. Those sound like Hall of Famers to you?
No.
Okay. So outside of the championships,
it's the worldwide resume.
Zach Randolph. Zach Randolph Hall of Famer?
No shot.
Grindhouse? Memphis? Sure.
No shot.
That's why the Basketball Hall of Fame is kind of funny, right?
Do you think... I think they put way too much credence in their international... Like, I love Tony Kukoc. I never thought of him as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, but go back and look at his European resume is insane. And again, it's not the NBA Hall
of
Fame.
That's like saying, okay... The guy's Japanese baseball league stats were tremendous. Yeah, but does it really count for a whole bunch? Like, if Danny Manning would have gone and scored 30 per game if he played in the Croatian league.
All right. What's more outrageous? Harold Baines would be in the Hall of Fame or Kukoc?
Ooh, good call. That's a good question.
As a Sox fan, I mean, Harold, really? Come on. Mean, seriously? I would have been in the Hall of Fame. He's my friend. Put him in. That's how that worked.
Look.
What? I mean, you know that.
No, I don't. I'm not disagreeing.
I love Harold, but it's just like, come on now.
Right.
Come on. Stop.
But.
Stop it.
To go back at what Jeff said, it is not the NBA Hall of Fame. It is the Basketball Hall of Fame. That's how, you know, you get like Jay Wright is in the Hall of Fame.
Deserves it.
Deservingly so. He's a great coach, but it's not the what you did in the NBA. It's what you your body of work in your career.
Like Rick Adelman.
Wow.
Well, you, I mean, he's in there.
We'll crosstalk with Carmen and Yurko in 2 minutes.
Weird.